Welcome to season two of the Good Market Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Cunningham. Each month, we hear from good people with great products, supporting exceptional causes, and making incredible impacts on communities around the world. Join us now as we hear another good story about impact that's happening right near you. Hey, everybody. Welcome to a very special episode of Good Market Live, one in a topic that we've not yet discussed before. So I'm really excited to share this with you today. I've got Bea Shapiro joining me. Welcome, Bea.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
We're happy to have you here. Bea is the founder of Ellis Brooklyn, and it's a clean fragrance brand, but there's also products beyond fragrance. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. And Bea, let's just jump right in. Like, this is obviously not your first career. You had a whole career before Ellis Brooklyn, and we'll get into the story behind Ellis Brooklyn, but I'd love to hear a little bit about what you were doing that, you know, before you did fragrance, before you were a founder, before you joined this crazy world of entrepreneurship.
It is a crazy world for sure. I actually had two careers before, if you can imagine this. So I actually went to law school. I went to Georgetown Law. I didn't actually really know what I wanted to do. I think back then when I think about careers, I think we were allowed to make more mistakes maybe. I think that no one really knew what was going on. We didn't have social media. We didn't know what everyone was up to. We only knew what our close circle was up to. So I went to law school, not because I wanted to be a lawyer, because I actually couldn't get a job coming out of undergrad. And So I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I had no internships. I had nothing. So I took the LSAT and went to law school. And so I went to law school and I actually realized that, okay, there's some really interesting stuff here, but I actually did not enjoy the practice of law. I did do some internships and I was like, what am I doing? That being said, you know, I was in my early 20s and I went to New York, worked at a law firm in New York City in hedge fund law for, oh my gosh, I think 9 months. That's it. And then I was like, this can't be life. So I quit. I don't recommend this necessarily for anyone because I really had no plan. I didn't have a whole lot in savings. I just remember being like, oh my gosh, I have X amount of dollars. You know, I didn't have the safety net of my parents or anything like that. And so if I was going to do something, I better do it now. And so long story short, I realized the reason why I went to law school is I actually love the written word. And so I started writing for little publications and I always loved fashion. I always loved culture. And so I found my way to the New York Times and I wrote for the paper.
Small little paper section. Just the New York Times.
The funny part is that a lot of people don't know this. I actually tried to apply to so many different places just to even get an internship and no one would hire me.
Really?
Because if you think about it, my resume was super weird. Like I went to law school, I worked as a lawyer, and now I want to be an intern. Like it was a hard story to sell.
Yeah.
And so I started writing for little publications and that's how I found my way to the Times, is just build. So I wrote for the New York Times, I think, for almost 14 years.
Wow.
So it was a long run.
Super cool. And did you start writing in beauty? Because I know that background, but was that where you started or what did you start with?
I actually started in fashion first.
Okay.
And the intersection of art and fashion.
Okay.
And it was that moment where there was like imagery by Ryan McGinley. There was imagery, you know, a crossover of Terrence Coe into fashion. And there was all that happening, which I found super fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I did cover runway shows. So I covered a lot of the, not necessarily critique of the actual fashions, but I covered the people who went, the backstage, the atmosphere, that kind of thing.
Sort of the Bill Cunningham of the written word, right?
He was amazing. He used to come to my desk and water my flowers for me because they were always dying. A little bit. Yeah. You know, he was way out there. He was like in the sense that he was always out,
right,
like shooting.
Right.
I definitely, you know, did some story digging, did some researching. He was always on the ground.
Yeah. Interesting that you were covering people. I mean, in anybody that hasn't been to fashion shows, and those of us that have been lucky enough to attend them as part of our job know, as glamorous as they look on TV and in movies, it's nothing like that in real life.
The real production of glamour, and I want to say this to anyone young living out there who is thinking about this, is really, truly that, a production.
Yeah.
And if you don't love the production, then you probably don't want to be in it, you know,
for sure.
Because it's truly a manifestation of a creative vision, but that creative vision is just the surface and it only happens for, what, 10 minutes?
Yeah, and then it's done. Right.
And then it's done. And you know, and if you don't enjoy that, yeah, the build up to that, then it's probably not for you.
Interesting. Yeah. And it's interesting to hear your thoughts about that with regards to production. And then, and we'll talk a little bit about production of your fragrance too, because that's something that's sort of the opposite. Like, you spend a lot of time in production and then a fragrance hits and arguably could become lifetime for someone.
That is so true. Time and beauty is different, and it's actually something I really enjoy. It's funny, when I speak with my former fashion friends, a lot of them want to move to beauty because I think beauty in some ways is more beautiful. And beautiful, by that I mean it really integrates into your life, as opposed to fashion is so glitzy and so shiny and so sexy and all those things that you want when you're younger. But when you're older, you kind of have a more defined version of yourself. So I don't know if I'm always looking at fashion anymore, whereas beauty for me is this like gorgeous constant that, yes, it's something that you love. Literally, you could be using, you know, 2 decades.
So you moved from fashion into beauty by choice or just because there was something there? Like, how did that happen? How did that transition happen?
It was by accident. So the beauty columnist at the Times left to take her dream job in the travel section. So they had this beauty column open. And at that time, beauty wasn't that covered in the New York Times. They had, you know, a piece a week, and sometimes it was large and sometimes it wasn't. It was definitely consistent. It just wasn't a huge priority for them. And so when that column opened up, I believe I was probably the last person asked to take it. I was the youngest in the section at that point in time. And so, you know what? I accepted gratefully. And I remember going to my first beauty event, and I didn't even really know what was going on. I knew on a very surface level what was going on. And it was, I'll never forget, it was for a Salvatore Ferragamo fragrance launch.
Wow,
and
very
cool. It was super cool. I just didn't completely understand everything that went into it.
Right.
And I fell in love with beauty, is what I like to say, over the years.
Interesting. So, and a fragrance launch, kind of ironic that you started with a fragrance launch and then ended up creating a fragrance. So let's fast forward a little bit. You're writing for beauty and then you have your first child, right?
Yes. So I became pregnant with Ellis, and that's really when I started germinating all these different ideas. So, you know, it's funny. I never connected that my very first beauty event was fragrance until now, but it's true.
Yeah.
For me, I was so wowed by fragrance, and maybe because I did start in fashion. Of all the beauty categories, I do think fragrance is a little bit more closely tied to fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I say that is because it's more dreamy. It isn't functional. It isn't something that you can even describe really well. It's very emotional. And so for me, seeing all these different products come across my desk, I wanted to create fragrance from a different perspective. So imagine Ellis is almost turning 9. So when I was pregnant with her, this is quite a while ago, and it took me several years to actually come out with the product. But I really wanted to come from a different perspective in fragrance that at that time did not exist. So it was a very non-diverse world. It was a very closed off world. It had beautiful aspects such as craftsmanship and artisanship, etc. But it actually had very little diversity as far as who is actually dictating the scents. And so for me, seeing that, I was like, why is that? Why is it always dictated by a certain kind of person? And 2 is that I wanted to have cleaner ingredients. I felt like the sustainability story, the ingredient story wasn't being told in fragrance. And I felt like being pregnant, particularly, that it was really important.
And I mean, that was really, you were early. I mean, 10 years ago, people were not talking about clean at all. And it's obviously much more prevalent now, which is a great thing. But I love that you were kind of thinking that way. I mean, I'm a parent as well. And it certainly, becoming a parent changes your perspective on a lot of things, arguably clean being one of the most important, organic, whether that's the food you eat or the products you're putting on your body. So really interesting idea. So like, I want to create a fragrance. Great. I mean, I've been around fragrance a lot in my career. It's not something you just do randomly. It's like you didn't throw this together in your kitchen. Like, how did this happen? Like, how did you say, I'm going to make a fragrance and then like start jumping into it?
That's why it took us at least 3 years, I believe, to come out with the fragrance collection. Absolutely. It's funny because I thought because I was a New York Times beauty columnist and I knew all these connections, I knew all these things about beauty, that'd be relatively easy for me to put something together, a team together, a creative brief, et cetera, et cetera. It was so difficult. I think that fragrance, like I said, is very difficult to describe. And so because it's so difficult to describe, it's actually, one, just really hard to connect with a master perfumer. Like, well, do they want to work with you? They don't have to work with you. They Sure. They have their choice of clients. Mm-hmm. And so when you're describing your vision to someone who doesn't know you, who has their choice of whoever they want to work with, it was so tough in the beginning. It was really so tough. I had many non-answered phone calls, and it was a surprise to me because I was like, hey, I write for the New York Times, but I realized behind the scenes I'm manufacturing, no one really cared, you know?
They're like, so what?
Yeah, they're like, great, good for you.
So how did you, this idea of clean fragrance, how did you find somebody that was doing clean, or how did you kind of go down that path of clean and sustainably sourced?
So we were so early that I must have been so difficult for them in the beginning because we were so early that a lot of these things weren't being discussed. And so it was even just sitting down with the early partners that we had on what exactly are the issues in fragrance, mm-hmm. right? I think that clean is sometimes a little bit simpler in skincare in the sense that we know XYZ does XYZ on your system. Fragrance sometimes is about percentages. And this is not just synthetic ingredients, by the way. This is also, things like oak moss or things that are regulated, mm-hmm. that are natural but can be very irritating. So it was really, okay, where is our baseline? And so we realized one quick cut at clean is, number one, following the EU baseline, because they had done all this research. They had done all this testing on allergens, et cetera. So number one, we chose to be globally compliant, not just in the EU, but also Australia, et cetera, but without animal testing. So that was our first, like, okay, let's just set a baseline of what clean means to us. And you have to imagine, it still is the case in the US, there's no regulation here at Wow. all. So it is totally voluntary if a brand wants to be EU compliant. Yeah, it is a free for all. And so because I think I wrote for the Times for so long, I had tried so many products, a lot of the early clean products actually broke out in rashes because I think they weren't necessarily thinking this way. You have to imagine 10 years ago, 8 years ago, it was really about natural and not natural. And we were never that company because of the fact that I was pregnant. So we really went deep with the safety testing. So we started that as a baseline. And then we started to have a lot of regular conversations with our suppliers on what exactly are the issues. So, for example, in fragrance, one of the issues is actually acrylates, which isn't as much of an issue in anything else except for nail polish. So
that's kind of random. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So it was a process. Wow. It was step by step.
So you have this idea for this fragrance. You're having a child, so hence the name, right?
Yes, Ellis, pregnant with Ellis, living in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
So perfect. But you didn't name it for yourself. However, you have a fragrance name for yourself.
The fragrance that came later, actually initially the working name was Solo.
Oh, cool.
And it was created during COVID. And it was, I call it my fragrance for falling in self-love. Oh, it was very, the adjustment from beginning of COVID to into COVID was very difficult for me. I had been traveling quite a bit for Ellis Brooklyn. I derive a lot of my inspiration from travels. And to suddenly just stay still was a very odd. And to sit in this little office, you know, at home. And even the perfumer I worked with on B, whose name is Lok Dong. He's one of the few, if not only, master perfumers who's Asian. So I basically somewhat stalked him to work with him because he's amazing and talented. And so I'd never met Lok in person until after the scent came out. It was my first time really in Yeah, we work very closely with perfumers, so that was the first time for me, and it was unusual. You know, we would get on these Zooms together and smell what we call mods or modifications together on Zoom, but it wasn't the same as sitting there in person and making little adjustments here.
So you had
a
scent of it, he had a scent of it, you're both smelling it. Interesting that you could actually do that over Zoom. I wouldn't have thought about that. That's kind of cool, though.
So, it was definitely tough, though we did it.
Yeah, and where is he based?
He's based in New York now, so okay. The reason why I say I semi-stalked him was because I found out he moved from Paris to New York, and I contacted the fragrance house, and I said, can I work with him?
That's very cool. So did he, right, do you, when you're starting to create a fragrance, do you go right in and say, okay, I want to create a clean fragrance, and I want it to smell like X, or how does that, how does that happen?
So in the very early days when I first started Ellis Brooklyn, you know, I created these briefs. So I put together images, maybe even songs, and I used to send it over to the perfumer, and then we would go back and forth and have these modification rounds. Mm-hmm. But I actually found out that's not very precise. And one of the perfumers that I've really gotten to know, his name is Frank Vogel. He's absolutely amazing. And he calls it building a scent vocabulary together.
Oh, cool.
And I actually... Yes, because we have different definitions of what each person's clean is, or each person's sexy is, or each person's, you know, dirty is. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, they're all tinged by each person's memories. If I say, oh, I wish this fragrance was lighter and cleaner, what does that mean?
Right.
And so what we did actually in the initial meetings was actually just to smell a bunch of random ingredients together and random little accords, which are three note compositions, mm-hmm. and what my words were to describe those. And that has actually become much more effective than my early days of sending the brief, et cetera. And then I do have a vision. So for example, with our newest scent, Florist, I knew I wanted to do a white floral, but what did that mean and which flowers are that and what am I trying to convey? And so I wanted to do a white floral, but one that had air to it, like luminosity and also freshness. Like, can we make this category feel new? And so that was the starting point for Florist as opposed to a creative brief.
So what was the first fragrance?
Myth,
right. I knew that. I was just kind of asking to for fun. So Myth, I wanted to talk a little bit about the names of the fragrances. I think Myth defines your philosophy behind that really well, but I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the names and where the names come from.
So the names are all really personal, and the fragrances often have some sort of spoken word, written word, storytelling element to it. So with Myth, for me, it still is to this day our quote-unquote Brooklyn scent, because it reflected a point in time in the city, which I still think is very relevant today, is how do you live in a city? And so Myth is very intimate, like you're at a loud party and you're talking to your lover or your friend, and they lean in and they tell you a story. And so Myth is the kind of scent that invites you to lean a little closer. And also it's inspired by how stories can be spun in the city. The city, New York City, is very big, but it's also very small. And so, you know, there was the classic stories where somebody would hear something, they would tell somebody else, and it gets spun to something else.
Sure.
And it's like a game of telephone. And so I was thinking all those things for Myth. So it's like the urban myth, the myth that can happen in New York City where everybody's trying to be something.
And so a question for you on the New York City thing, and you know, we've both had the chance to live in New York City, and it's certainly, I think anytime anyone gets to live in the city, your perspective of the city post-city life is different than somebody that hasn't been there, right? Because to your point, it's as big as it is, it's also very small, and there's kind of made up these little communities. Do you think that New York will always inspire you in some way as the line? I mean, obviously Brooklyn is part of your name, but do you think New York will always inspire you no matter where you live and whatever fragrances you're creating?
Oh, absolutely. I'm still in the city a lot. So I'm in the city about 2-3 days a week. And I think the city keeps changing. And one of the things that maybe this is my newspaper side in me, one of the things I find most fascinating about New York City is that if you haven't gone for a long time, but you lived there a long time ago and you live for a long time there, you have an impression in the city. And then you go back and you're like, oh, this corner has changed. That corner has changed. Like, there's a funny little thing that happens with people that they love to talk about their era of New York City. I think because I'm still in the city quite a bit, I see it still for what it is in the sense that it's still changing. It's an ever-changing city, much more than any of the other big cities of the world. For example, I just went to London for a work trip. And London, the restaurants just don't change as much, right, at the same speed. It still is a big, great city of the world. It's just different. And so for me, New York is always going to be inspiring because it has that spirit of ever change. And we do actually have a fall scent that's a love letter to the city. So,
oh, cool.
Yes. Little. The love letter to the city is of that era that when I first arrived, which was very bustling and everybody was out all the time. Everybody was dressed.
Yeah.
You know, I love, you know what I miss about the city? I miss that era where everybody was dressed. God forbid you would go to a brunch in leggings, you know?
I was just talking about that with somebody yesterday. We were talking about, I mean, like, I don't obviously live in the city any longer and I don't have a need to be in suits, but I have so many suits because my career that was spent in New York, like we were in suits and we weren't in suits that were 3 years old. We were in suits that were from that season. And so naturally now you end up with this collection of at the time current clothes that later you don't need. But that was part of the idea of being dressed. It was just what we did. You know, you hoodies were relegated to sitting at home, you know, doing things at home. You weren't walking around. But, you know, it's just funny how the times change. So I want to talk a little bit about your logo, too, and a really interesting story behind the logo and the connection to you as a writer as well. But can you tell us a little bit about Literary Lion versus your current logo?
Yes. So we actually designed a whole logo that was a lion. And the idea was the literary lion. So when you've really made it in writing world, they call you a literary lion. There's even a literary lion awards, and it's just a really iconic status. And so I thought, how perfect for our quote-unquote logo icon for it to be this iconic thing in literary world. But I went to this Pen American Gala, which was one of the galas when I was in writer world that I loved, and I felt like I was surrounded by all these amazing writing titans. And that night, and I won't name any names, but that night that I went, every single literary line was like somebody I had no identification with. I was like, wow, you grew up in XYZ world that I have nothing to identify with. And I just felt like maybe the term is antiquated. Mm-hmm. And so we adapted our logo and changed it to a leopard because I still love the idea of literary lion, but maybe it's a literary leopard now because we're also trying to redefine a category fragrance that's been very, very sad in its ways for a long time.
Yeah, I love that. It's super cool. And probably a part of your story that doesn't get told enough. It's one, you know, one of the things that we love to do at Good Market is tell the stories of the brands, not just have the brands sitting on a shelf. And I think that, you know, it's just one more part of your story that we get to tell, which is exciting and a point of differentiation. It's almost like we've built here this sort of cult is maybe not the right word, but this like kind of following of people that sort of know it and they come in and they're excited to see the next new fragrance, even though they have their favorite and they'll pick up two. And, you know, another kind of interesting thing that you do is the fragrance books that allow people to really get into it. Do you have sort of a count on how many fragrances, like when you're going to be done, when you're going to say, okay, that's my collection, there's no more fragrances?
Maybe it's my fashion side, but we curate. So we actually get rid of scents that we think maybe is never resonated or is not doing well, or maybe we could do it better. For example, we recently sunsetted a fragrance that I think that I can do better. So it's funny because yes, I do think there is an upper tier in how many fragrances one person can have. But I also think as we grow as a brand and I start to expand a little bit globally, there are actually so many different tastes for fragrance that it's not that we're just trying to cater to one person or inspire one person, frankly. It's really, where can I take this? And if I run out of creative juice, that's one thing. But I feel like I still have a lot of ideas.
Cool. That's great. I think it's interesting, too, that your fragrance with your fashion background, there are plenty of people that can live in that high glam, high dollar fashion world, right? But you actually are giving people the accessibility to that fashion world by doing what you're doing in a very different way. And they may not be able to afford the $10,000 gown. And, you know, we're coming off of the Met Gala recently, that kind of thing. But they can afford a fragrance that can be personal to them, that can give, like, let them get into that fashion world. Really interesting approach. I think it's super cool.
Yes, you know, you and I both came from fashion. You were in it longer than me, certainly. But I think one thing about fashion is that it inherently excludes. Mm-hmm. It almost is part of its nature, right? Like, oh, you're cool or not cool. Oh, this is in or not in. And I think during COVID era, like you said, people started wearing hoodies. People started wearing all sorts of things. But I just think if you look at the history of fashion, that's just what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I think that if you take it as what it is, it's very interesting. But I think beauty, because, and especially beauty now, which I think is so exciting and terrific, that you can include all these people and you're still cool, mm-hmm. and you're still, yeah. interesting. And yes, you don't have to have such an alienating price point all the time.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we talk a lot about being inclusive here. And in fact, we have a tagline, "You belong here," that we really want everybody to feel like there's a place they can do good. And that's arguably what you're doing with your fragrance. Like, everybody has a place. It's more about you're giving different opportunities for them to find their place in the Ellis Brooklyn collection, right? Talk to me about the color. The color is, which is a unique approach, right? When you think about fragrance houses, the kind of the big fragrance houses of the world, the Hermeses, and the one color, Tom Ford, everything looks exactly the same. I don't want to steal your thunder. Tell us the story about the color. I think the color's great.
So when I started the line, I did take that route where it was everything Black Cat, Black Label, and we only had 4 fragrances to start with. So that was our launched collection. It was 4 fragrances in the Black Cat, Black Bottle, and Black Label. I mean, a clear bottle and then Black Label. Mm-hmm. And so I really took a look at that, and it was fun when we launched. But as we added more scents, my vision of fragrance also got more probably nuanced, and I realized is that fragrance at the end of the day is not a necessity. It is not something like I have to wash my face for cleanliness reasons. It's not like I have to have, you know, fragrance over a bar of soap, right? Mm-hmm. So when I thought about why we wear fragrance, it actually is ultimately tied to self-pleasure. And whether it is because we wear a fragrance because, you know, it gives our partner pleasure, or whether we get compliments, at the end of the day, it actually turns into self-pleasure. And so because of that, I wanted people to look at their vanity and look at a fragrance, understand what that fragrance is or have an idea, but also to be, yay, I wake up with this gorgeous blue salt color and I want to reach for it. And I think the classic brands, their bottles are beautiful and they're gorgeously designed, but they're a little bit, I don't want to say serious, but they're more limited in, I think, what they can do as well. And so for me, I feel like the color, like if you look at the color of the bee bottle, it looks like that rich honey. If you look at salt, it's inspired by Big Sur and beach glass. So I wanted people to know immediately the whole story, right? I do think color has so much influence in our life, too.
It's very cool. I think it's a really unique and certainly a differentiator for you from a lot of other brands, but, you know, a cool place to be. I don't know if you can answer this or not, but what's your favorite? Like, what do you wear? Do you change or do you wear the same thing every day?
I do not wear the same thing every day. I change all the time. So Myth is probably my go-to. Like, if it's my default, I'm taking Myth with me. I lately have been wearing a lot of salt and sunfruit together.
Oh, cool.
And yes, salt is much more unisex, genderless, and sunfruit is very much indulgent, vacation, beach era. And so when they go together, there's something very elevated and also yummy that when they come together. And so I've been doing that a lot.
Yeah, fragrance layering is also something relatively new. I mean, I've been around fragrance a long time, longer than I should say, but fragrance layering is really an interesting way to kind of even take it one step further. So you're creating a fragrance that's very personal, but then somebody can almost make it even that much more personal by putting, you know, you're wearing 2, but maybe they wear salt with who knows what. Maybe they wear it with, you know, Apres or something.
It's true. So vanilla milk and Apres actually go amazing together too, I've discovered. So fragrance layering is interesting. Other cultures around the world have actually been fragrance layering for quite some time. I think in the US, it's intimidating or can be intimidating. So I think one of the easiest ways to approach it is actually from this New York Times article I wrote way back when. She's passed on now, but it was this designer, Isabel Toledo. Mm-hmm. And she told me that she fragrance layered, but put it in different spots. So she would put one fragrance behind her ears, behind her knees, and then she put another fragrance in her décolleté, and that gave this aura when she walked by that it all came together. I actually love that idea of fragrance layering for someone who's just approaching it, because I think putting two scents together can be very intimidating. You're like, how's that going to turn out?
And maybe overwhelming. Maybe people put on too much because they're thinking, oh, if I put on one, this is how much I put, so I need to put two on with that. Maybe that's too much, right?
It's true. Or like with Après, it's quite a strong woodsy scent. And so if you put vanilla milk on it, it is beautiful. But you can also do it where you do Après on your wrist and vanilla milk on your chest area.
Interesting. I like Après, but that leans into, I mean, I also like sci-fi. I'm a big fan of sci-fi too.
Thank you. Yeah. I love sci-fi. I feel like it's underrated. It's like this cultish thing on TikTok. A lot of book readers love sci-fi, and I love that.
So how many are you looking at doing a year? How many? Do you have a plan, or is it more just kind of as an inspiration hits you?
I would limit it to like two a year. Three. The truth is, you know, the thing about scent development is interesting. Sometimes you're banging your head on the wall because you're like, I have no scent to launch this year. What am I going to do? And then other times you get, you know, an assortment of modifications and options that you're like, oh my gosh, I actually have to limit myself because I actually don't know. You know, I have to really sort of whittle the ideas down because I have so many good options. So I like to limit myself to two a year because sometimes I feel like I could launch more, but I think that's like a good number for us.
That's great. And you've expanded now beyond fragrance too, which people may not be aware of. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired you to do that?
Yeah, so we have body oils, which I absolutely adore, and we also have candles. Mm-hmm. So the candles is really personal for me because they're this really, really beautiful vegan wax that's very safe to burn. And one thing I learned when I was formulating all this stuff and pregnant, et cetera, is that when we burn candles at home that are paraffin, it's actually incredibly toxic. Yeah. And I was that New York City candle burner.
We were too.
That always had a candle burning, you know? And I was like, what? It's like when I read this stuff, I was like, wait, what? I was so blown away. And I had no idea why there weren't warning labels or something like that, because it actually is bad for small pets too. So if you have a pet at home, I would definitely think about that. And so the candles were super personal in the sense that I never expected them to be our top seller, but I was like, I want candles at home that I feel safe burning and that I love and I think are beautiful. So the scents are a little bit different in that I do think a lot of times scents that you wear and scents that you burn are different. Mm-hmm. I think that home scents tend to be warmer, have more woods, maybe more spices, and you might not actually want to wear that. So our scents for home are a little bit different. Yeah. And then the body oils, I just adore. So the body oils are a great way to wear scent, especially if you're one of those people where scent disappears on. And so the thing about scent longevity is that scent itself grabs on to oil molecules. So if you don't have a lot of oil in your skin, whether the weather or just naturally you don't have a lot of oil on your skin, you are going to have issues with scent longevity. It also can happen in super hot, dry weather. So if you imagine like in the Middle East, how hot it gets, or Arizona, let's say, that fragrance is going to dissipate like in 2 seconds because your skin is dry and the air is really dry.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So yeah, that's cool. It makes so much sense in the Middle East why people wear stronger fragrances, because it literally evaporates. And so similarly, though, if you live in Phoenix, you know, Scottsdale or even parts of Texas, it's something to think about. Yeah. So body oils, I think, is a really lovely way to wear all over scent without it being overwhelming to yourself. So you don't have to go for some crazy high concentration perfume level, and just have it wear evenly throughout the day. I actually wear the body oils a lot.
Do you wear the body oil with the fragrance, or no, you don't need to?
So I actually, when I said I was layering salt and sunfruit, I have been wearing the salt body oil with the sunfruit perfume.
Interesting. Very cool. So we talked a lot about your first daughter, Ellis, but now you have two daughters. So how's that inspiring you as a mom of two daughters? And now that they're obviously knowing, one of them knows their names everywhere and the other one is like, where's my name?
It's so true. My younger daughter, Skye, is six. She's such a little force. Sometimes I look at her, I'm like, who are you? Like, she's so opinionated. It's funny. She's like a funny little person. And so it is true that she can read now. And so she keeps asking me little things. She'll come up to me and be like, when am I going to have my thing? And I don't have bandwidth. Is there another company? So I was thinking maybe a Send, but that sent better sell really well. Right. Can't be discontinued. So yes, I've definitely been brainstorming on what I can do for Sky. I do think being a parent, like you said earlier, changes things. Mm-hmm. I think your priorities change. I also think I'm way more efficient and better decision maker in some ways because you just have no time.
Yeah.
But my latest scent, Florist, is actually inspired by them. So if you look at our line, it's pretty gender neutral. Myth is gender neutral, Salt, Après. Mm-hmm. There isn't a whole lot if you think about gender as a spectrum on the super feminine side. And so my girls have been playing ice hockey, but they're really girly girls. So they'll go out and play ice hockey like savages and then come back, take off all their stinky pads and then like put on a tutu and paint their nails and put sparkle glitter on. And I'm like, well, why can't we do that? Yeah. We should be able to do that. And I have no option for this girly girl down here who should have an option. And so that's where Florist came from, actually.
Oh, cool. Very cool. So quick question for you. My daughter's middle name is Rose and you have a fragrance called Rose. But it has two R's.
Yes. So it's actually a French play on words. It's supposed to be Eros.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And it was this provocateur, Marcel Duchamp's alter ego. Uh-huh. He called himself Eros et la vie.
Ah.
Which means like Eros, like love, you know, love.
Right. Yes. E-R-O-S.
Such as love. Yes, that's right.
Very cool. Interesting. Good to know. My daughter, whose middle name is Rose, is not a huge fragrance wearer. But she was curious about that, and I was curious about that too. Interesting. Yeah.
How old is she?
She's 14.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So I would say 14 and up, they're starting to wear a lot more fragrance. So I would check in on her in 2 years and see where she's at.
She has a couple that she wears, but it's not an everyday thing. It's sort of as the mood hits her kind of thing. But she's also a literary like you. So I think that, she's a writer. She bought herself a vintage typewriter because she wants to be a writer, and she writes now and she types on her vintage typewriter. So I'm going to share more of your story with her because I think it might be inspiring for her too.
That's amazing. Yeah. So first of all, I love hearing stories like that because, you know, we're on TikTok a lot. We're on Instagram a lot. We're on all the social media channels a lot. And, you know, I always get concerned for young people because I do feel like TikTok particularly is so intense. Mm-hmm. And when I hear stories like that where you're reconnecting, she's connecting with words in a very, very manual, visceral way. I love that.
Yeah, it's great, except at 5:30 in the morning when she wakes up and she's typing. To hear a typewriter at 5:30 in the morning is not great. But we do love it. But on that note about telling stories and writing stories, I always like to ask everybody on, kind of as we wrap up, part of what we do at Good Market, which I think is a, you know, it's part of our philosophy and part of our approach and something that we'll always do, is telling the stories of the brands. And you know, we have brands that are doing all different kinds of good. Yours is obviously the clean and the sustainably sourced part, which is a great story to tell. But each one of our founders also has a great story, and you clearly have a great story. And if you had to pick someone to tell your story, the B story, who would you pick to tell your story, and why would you pick them? It could be anybody, living, dead, anything.
Oh my gosh.
Famous, infamous.
Oh my gosh. For posterity or for jokes.
Or both. Well, you can do both. Nobody's ever asked for jokes. I'd love to hear both. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's two sides to me. So there's one side that I'm like, oh my gosh, I want a beautiful writer to write my story. And there's that side who, when I was younger, the only thing I wanted was to write for the New Yorker, you know? And then there's the other side of me that's like, let's have a laugh. So there's this author named Jenny Molin who writes hysterical things, and how funny would it be if she wrote my story? Like, she's another mom. She's in New York City, and she just is hilarious. And she's just a funny person. I love following her social media because it's like motherhood, but with like a sarcastic twinge, you know?
Nothing ever wrong with a little sarcasm.
Yes, you know, a little humor. So when I think back on that, I would have to say Jenny Molin.
Very cool. Good answer. Well, Bea, it's great talking to you and great learning more about Ellis Brooklyn. Obviously, we are big fans of yours and look forward to every new fragrance that you come out with. So keep them coming. Thanks for taking the time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I so enjoyed this.
Great. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Good Market Podcast. A new episode will drop the second Tuesday of each month, so make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening. Give us a like, a follow, and a share, and please leave a review so that we can reach even more people and grow even more good. Tune in next time to hear more stories from good people with great products supporting exceptional causes. We'll see you next month.